Yeah, just I've had quite a bad day today, and I was talking about it, everything that had happened, not only today but also what happened with the whole thing with his dad. Did you just hear that, by the way? Because the chat room is open on this computer.
I did.
Oh, okay, good. Not to worry then. Yeah, it was just we were talking about the whole thing that only happened today, but also happened with his dad a couple of weeks ago. And the conversation progressed to my relationship with my dad, which at the moment has degenerated into something of, well, it's pretty much based on utility for both of us. And then I can't remember how we got onto this, but we started talking about my sense of self, and the conversation just stopped there because I had quite a strong reaction to that, with sort of tears and everything like that. And yeah, I'm just not sure really where to go from there.
So the old sense of self question. Yeah, that's a tricky
Yeah.
one. That's a tricky one. So let's start with your feelings. So how did you feel? What was it that you said you got emotional? What was the specific question that gave you that feeling of emotionality?
I really can't remember because I was the one who offered the information saying, well, at the moment, I don't really feel like I have a sense of, I don't really have my a self for me. I don't really, to use your cliche, I don't really know who I am. I've
Right.
gone through quite a lot of changes in the past year, some of which have been better than others. Like I went through a stage when I got loads of piercings, and then I took them all out because I realized that actually that was just, it was all for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, that's not good. Yeah, that's not good.
No, it really, really wasn't, and I realized that. But at the same time, I still have this part of me when I see people who look like that, who have that. Intellectually, I'm saying, oh, that's a total manifestation of things they can't express verbally. But part of me still thinks, part of me, it's not jealousy, but I'm trying to describe it. It's kind of like, oh, they're so lucky because they have that freedom. But at the same time, I know it's not freedom. But it's just getting to that point where I don't have that gut reaction that says, oh, I remember those days
Right,
because
the good old
I
days.
was so unhappy. I was so unhappy when I had them. I really, really was. It's not just, I people's reactions are so bad. Like I got yelled at in the street by a guy. Obviously people treat you differently because they can see that all is not well. But then I know that, and I know it's not a good thing. But I still have this kind of instinctive reaction on an emotional level. And I
So
think
that, yeah,
that.
there's a certain kind of envy for you, right? With that kind of freedom. And
Yeah.
I'm not gonna diminish the term, right? Because this is genuinely what you feel, that there's a kind of freedom that these people have, and a kind of it's like somewhere between arrogance and insouciance, like there's a kind of
Yeah.
mad confidence in that, right?
Oh yeah, definitely. For me, it was very much don't give a shit type thing.
Right, and well advertised not giving a shit, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But of course I did.
Well, yeah, with no question, no question.
Yeah.
I mean, it was interesting because I don't know if you've heard the podcast on the Ricky Sandwich, but Ricky
No,
was.
I'm only in the 600s.
Oh, okay. This guy Ricky came up when we had a barbecue on the weekend on the some in the summer, and he was contemplating piercings, and this is a topic that's come up somewhat regularly on the Free Domain
Yeah.
Radio forums, and because. People come sailing in here and it's like, ooh, he's an anarchist, Ooh, he's radical, he's out there, So I'm going to talk about my piercings and I say that's self-mutilation. And then people get really angry. I'm not saying you did, but it is a very volatile subject for people. And when I was talking about it with Ricky, it is a it does not attract the highest quality people into your life. It is a very strong
No,
advertisement
absolutely.
that you lack a sense of self, and you need to make up for a lack of impression that you make either on yourself and on the world through jangling and piercings and all that, that you need to put something out there that you yourself are not enough to be interesting or to leave an impression or to have an effect on people. It has to be you plus something else, right? Whatever that is. And it's different things
Yeah.
for different people. It can be piercings, or it can be a Lamborghini, or it can be a hairpiece, or it can be breast implants, or whatever it is. It can be a six-pack stomach. It has to be you plus something that could be enough to hold people's interest. But of course, if you are just yourself, then you don't need the flashy, right? You don't need the advertising because that doesn't draw the best people to you. So I totally understand, at least I think I do, where you're coming from in terms of why you did it and why you didn't do it. And I think I may also have a good idea as to why you envy them.
I'd like to hear it because I don't.
Well, it's like there are certain kinds of nihilists out there who are really very tempting people. And the reason that they're tempting is they have this basic, I don't know if you can even call it a philosophy, but they have this basic approach to life, which is screw tomorrow, right? Like, I'm just gonna live for today. I'm gonna live for today, screw the dentist. I'm gonna eat whatever candy I want. And if you are cautious around these kinds of people, then you are mocked, attacked, and ridiculed, right? Like, there are
Yeah, all
certain
my friends
people,
used to be like
right?
that.
And there are certain people who will do this in terms of drugs or sexual activity or alcohol, that if you try to moderate your intake, then you're frankly a pussy in one form or another. I don't know if that word means the same thing. Not a cat and not a vagina, but a coward, right? So those kinds of people are very tempting because we all have a desire to throw caution to the wind and to plunge into the sensation of the moment, to that which gives us the greatest pleasure in the moment, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a lot of my friends were that exactly. With alcohol, drugs, sex, that they were exactly what you just said.
Yeah, any form of
I mean,
self-moderation.
I don't have, well, really any contact with them anymore, but yeah, that's very reminiscent of, I guess in that sense, I was a late starter. I didn't get into, I mean, these are people I knew in school, and I didn't, I wasn't really into alcohol on a regular basis or, piercings or anything like that until I went into university when I didn't see these people anymore. So, I think that has quite a lot to do with my family, though, because my family are very disapproving about that kind of thing.
Sure. Well, I mean, the phrase that you used there in terms of a late starter is interesting. Like, if I don't get cancer till I'm 90, I won't sit there and say, well, as far as cancer goes, I'm a late starter.
Yeah, I didn't mean that in a positive way.
Although it could be construed that way. It's just sort of interesting the words that you chose. But sorry, you were going to say something else?
Yeah, no, I know. I wasn't really. I didn't actually notice that, which is quite interesting. But no, I didn't mean it in a positive way at all. I just meant it as, I guess, a kind of sarcastic comment.
Right, right.
No, I'm not trying to portray it in any kind of good light.
Well, look, if
It's
mild sarcasm is the only vice that you retain from those days, it's magnificent, right? You've made a wonderful leap, right? But there is a real appeal, and you're not alone in feeling it, and everybody feels that. Like, I want to live for today, to hell with tomorrow. Why would I deny myself access in the moment? And if I deny myself access in the moment, suddenly I become this stern, prudish, disapproving school principal, if that makes sense, right? Like, those are the only two poles that you have: either massive hedonism, which is frankly destructive in mind, body, and spirit over the long run, you have massive hedonism, or you have uptight, anal-clenching prudery, right? That's the only two opposites. It's the only two possibilities, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what I spent last year terrified of, because my mum is pretty much the latter of those things, and I made a decision in March to stop talking to my mum, just because she's just not a very nice person, and but I still retained this fear that I was going to end up like her because she brought me up alone, my brother and I, for the past since I was 8 years, yeah, for the past 8 years. So I think I was very conscious of the fact that I could come across to people, it could come across to people that I was being very uptight, very anal about things. I completely agree with what you're saying, and I think as a result, I went totally the other way. The problem I'm having now, though, is that, the piercings are gone. I started smoking last year as well, which I've now quit because that's not a good thing. But I still feel very boring and very, nothing's really changed as far as feelings go. It's just the physical manifestations aren't there anymore.
And the draw, as you say, the envy is still there, right? Because those people who have excessive tribal tattoos or markings or piercings or whatever, they appear to be grabbing life by the horns, living in defiance of social convention, of doing their thing, to hell with everybody else's opinion. I'm going to live for today. I'm going to live for the moment. I'm not going to defer my gratification. I'm not going to wimp out. And like that, there is a real kind of we know that it's crazy, but there is a still a real kind of energy and seductiveness to
Oh yeah,
that life.
definitely. But it's just so wrong though, because they're not. That I know from when I used to have, loads of facial piercings, you limit yourself in what you can do. And I think I used that as an excuse. I wouldn't do certain things that I wanted to do because I'd say, oh, people would never let me do that because I look this way. And I think it's very much a form of self-defense, as well
And then you get
as,
to blame society for being so square and
yeah,
tight. Like, it
absolutely,
becomes a whole cyclical thing.
There is this idealism where you say, oh, well, if people weren't so stuck up, and if people weren't so old-fashioned, then and prejudice against the way people look.
Right. But as you can see, the extreme alteration of personal appearance is really just a way to turn society into your parents, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So that then, as your parents disapproved of you when you weren't doing these things, then you go out into the world and you feel the absence of that disapproval, and it's disorienting, right?
Well, I mean, it's weird though, because my parents, I mean, my mum, my grandmother, I got my ears pierced when I was, 11 or something, and then I wanted to get a second earring hole in each ear, and my mum just wouldn't let me. Point blank, just said no, absolutely not. My grandmother actually took me out to get them done when she came to stay with us, which of course my mum couldn't argue with. But interestingly enough, when I started going sort of beyond the boundaries of normality, nothing was said to me at all about it.
Interesting.
Absolutely nothing. I mean, my parents don't talk; they email each other. And my mum's been telling my dad for ages that I'm mentally ill and all that kind of stuff. But nothing really changed when I took my piercings out. It was all the fact that I had them didn't make any difference. Which just, I mean, that's something I hadn't really thought about it before, but on reflection now, it's quite interesting that she was so adamant that I shouldn't get the second earring hole because it's, really common. It's something that, common people do and all that kind of really prejudiced stuff. And when I actually was doing something that would limit what I could do in life, not a thing was said.
Yeah, that is interesting. That is interesting, and certainly people who like to exercise power over you only do it when they feel they can win, right? And I'm guessing that by the time you went whole hog on that, she felt that she could not win, and therefore she did not try. Because it's not about you, right? It's about her desire to exercise power. It's got nothing to do with your opportunities or your futures or your.
Oh, no, it never was about that. I mean, everything that happened when I was a kid was never about that, and that's something I've become more and more aware of
Right.
recently. It wasn't about me, it was about her and how she looked, you know. And I think pretty much the same with my dad, but on a far more subtler level.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone goes through a phase, and it's good that you're going through it, though I understand that it's disconcerting. But everyone goes through a phase where they attempt to pierce through the shell of cool, right? Of what is considered cool, of what is considered hip, of what is considered fun, and so on. I mean, I remember, oh, this is a couple of years ago, actually more than a couple, about 10 years ago. I lived in a flat in Toronto, and there was a squash building in the flat, and I used to play squash with a guy named Simon. And Simon was like a really good-looking fellow, and like a washboard stomach, looked kind of like Tom Cruise. And he was what is sometimes known as a man whore, right? Insofar as like he would just like if it's got a pulse, he's humping its leg, right? And I was single at the time, and he was always going out. So one night he invited me out, and I went. And it was a Halloween party, so I dressed up, got some friends, and we went. And then we were playing squash. A couple of days later, I went to his party, and he was there, and you know, chatting everyone up. And he had a real kind of crazy charisma to him, you know, like he's the kind of guy who'd like get up on a table at karaoke, and you'd just go with it, and it would be like you'd sort of feel diminished by that level of mad energy, but at the same time, it was sort of entertaining to watch, and so on. And he didn't show up for squash until like a week later, and I asked him what happened, and he said, "Well, I was at this party, and I was there. I came with this one woman, but then I saw this woman who's dressed up as a slutty nurse, and I wanted to go out. I wanted to go to bed with her, right? So it was my party, so and it was at a warehouse. So the girl that he came with said, I'm getting tired." And he said, "Well, just go to my place and crash, and I'll be there in a little while." And then he started chatting up the slutty nurse, and he then invited the slutty nurse to come home with him as well. Right. And like seriously, like I was just my jaw was like, oh my God, it's like a hell come to life. Like I couldn't understand what would happen, right? Because I don't live in that world. I don't even understand that world, right? But anyway, so he I asked him what happened, and he said, "Well, I came in with the second girl, and then the first girl woke up, and she got really mad that I'd brought the second girl home." And I said, "Well, yeah." And she got really mad. She started yelling at me, and this, she got really mad. And I said, "But what did you expect was going to happen?" And he just looked at me with a big grin, and he shrugged, and he said, "Hey, I just figured it would work out. I mean, I'm Simon." You know, like apparently everything just worked out for him in one way or another. So I was sort of skeptical of this naturally. So anyway, it turns out that the woman who was in his bed stormed out, and he managed to talk the slutty nurse into staying the night or whatever, right? And then the next morning, the girl who'd stormed out left him a big, long, angry tirade on his voicemail, but he'd contracted the flu. Right, which was probably if that was the only thing he contracted from the slutty nurse, he could probably count himself quite lucky. But he'd contracted the flu, so basically he just lay in bed for 3 days. You know, like when you've got the flu, you don't even want to breathe, let alone get out and answer phone calls, let alone be yelled at. And he said, "And my answering machine was on the so you could hear it when someone left a message, right? So the first day it was like, 'Simon, you son of a bitch, I can't believe you brought this other girl home. I can't believe you treated me with such disrespect. Blah 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 blah, yell yell yell.' And the next day it was like, 'Well, I'm still mad at you, but you haven't called me back. What's going on?' Right?" And then a day later, it was, "Are you okay? I'm really getting worried now. Please call me. I'm sorry that I yelled at you, blah, blah, blah." And then like the fourth day, it was like, "I'm coming over. I'm so worried about you. I love you so much. I'm so sorry that I yelled at you." All because he didn't call back, right? So, and I obviously never went out with the guy again. Because, actually, no, I did once more. And I spent the evening chatting with a guy who was a Calvin Klein model, who was very good looking and had some interesting stories to tell about the modeling world. But that kind of person is cool, right? They're good looking, they're athletic, they're fit, and he could go up and talk to any woman, right? Like he could just go up. And I'll just give you one other story. I hope this stuff is relevant to what you're talking about. But
No, it is actually, it is.
So we were at a bar this night that I was chatting with the Calvin Klein model. We were at a bar, and he went up to talk to a group of women, right? And they, because this is Toronto and women are kind of chilly here, right? So he went up to talk to these women, and they kind of just gave him a little half smile, and they didn't give him any go-go juice as far as, you know, getting back to in anything, right? And so he just said, okay, he said, I'm sorry for coming up and bothering you ladies, right? And he said, but help me understand something, if you don't mind. I just want to ask you a question. And they said, fine, what, right? And he said, do you guys have boyfriends? Right? And there was this long pause that they basically shook their heads. And he's like, okay. And I just said, he said, I just wanted to know, right? Because you guys don't have boyfriends, and I bet you you're going to go home and you're going to complain that there were no nice guys at the bar, or there were no good-looking guys at the bar, or there were no guys of any quality at the bar. And here I am, I'm a nice guy coming up to try and talk to you, and you totally give me the cold shoulder. I mean, you're totally rude. And then you're going to go home and complain about the fact that there are no nice guys around. I just sort of wanted to point that out, that if you don't have boyfriends and you don't let guys talk to you in bars, you've got nothing to complain about, right? And like listening to this role, it's like, oh my God, how could you conceivably do that? Like to me, I mean, I'm not the shyest person in the world, but I could never imagine berating someone for not talking to me in a bar. Like,
And also, he's not a nice guy.
well, but he got them convinced, right? And they ended up talking to him, right? So I just sort of wanted to point out that these kinds of characters are out there, and they're not that uncommon. And this is somewhat mild compared to. Like this guy was a bit of a health nut, right? So this is not quite the same as the nihilist that you were hanging out with. But these people are really attractive because part of me says, boy, I wish I had the balls to do that.
Oh yeah, definitely.
I wish I didn't care. I wish I wasn't concerned about what other people thought at all. Like, or I wish I could just say whatever was on my mind. And I really, and I, part of me, and I wrestled with this for weeks afterwards, like, why is it that I don't go up and say stuff like that and so on? Little did I know the future I had in store, right? But these people are really attractive, and they do challenge our sense of propriety, and they do challenge our sense of courage, and so on. But the only thing that I could really understand from this was that the reason that he was able to do these things is because he didn't feel anything.
I would totally agree because the people I knew at school who were like that are now just absolutely fucked up, just totally not with reality at all.
Yeah, they lack empathy.
They're just not on this planet.
They lack
And
empathy.
it's.
Sorry, the same feeling that allowed him to drag two women home, which is really lack of empathy for other people's feelings, was also what allowed him to charge around and leap on the tables and so on. And
Well,
it
it's
is
not
kind
having empathy for your own feelings as well.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, all he basically had was his immediate sensual needs. Right, like I
Yeah.
want to have sex, I want to have a drink,
Yeah, totally.
I want to play squash. It was all about his own needs, and his constant calculation was, how can I get, like, what do I need to say, and how do I need to control people in order for them to give me what I need? And it wasn't anything reciprocal or anything about. So with all these sorts of people, what you look at is not the immediate advertisement, but when you the way that you figure out to a large degree whether somebody's healthy or not. You have to look at the long view, and you also have to look at the quality of their personal relationships.
Yeah, I think that was what, I mean, I think that was what really did it for me with these people in particular. But it's just the fact that they were exactly as you described. Just absolutely, there was no quality in their personal relationships at all, and they used people. They picked them up, put them down as they as was convenient for them. Which is kind of the way my dad is as well. but I mean, going back to the thing you said about being cool, that's quite interesting because I was saying one of the things I brought up with James earlier was the fact that you know how kids sort of are themselves up to a certain point, and then you reach the age of, I think for me it was 7, 8, maybe 9 at the most, where you start becoming very conscious of the way you're acting around people. And it probably has a lot to do with puberty, but I think it's also a lot to do with the way you're brought up. You start becoming very conscious of the way you're supposed to act around people compared to the way you are acting, what's right to say, what's wrong to say. And looking back now, I feel that after that point, I was lost. I was a wannabe cool person, if you see what I mean, but that wasn't me.
Right, for sure, but who you were was rejected by your parents, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And that was exactly what that was exactly the conclusion that James and I came to, is the fact that whoever I might have been at that point was just totally crushed, because my mum especially was someone who was very very conscious of what other people thought, and everything we did was about what other people thought and how it looked to other people, which
Right.
just completely destroys who you are.
Right, but we do need to, I mean, we have as teenagers, right? The reason that teenagers have so many conflicts in families is that you can no longer suppress an identity when you become a teenager, right? So there, as I've mentioned in podcasts, right, there are these two phases where there's a lot of conflict with parents when you're very, very young, like sort of 18 months to sort of 30 months, and then when you become a teenager. When you become a teenager, all the bad parenting that you've been able to suppress when you're in the latency period from like 5 to 11 or so, 5 to 12, all the bad parenting that you've just been able to hang with your friends. And so, but when you become a teenager, you actually have to start making value judgments on your own. And so all the latent bad parenting comes out when kids become teenagers. And then what happens is the parents who are bad parents to begin with and thus have produced teenagers who can't make intelligent or valid or wise decisions with regards to values, what they do is the worst thing possible, which is they clamp down on those teenagers, right? But the ship has already sailed, right? I mean, the bow has already left the arrow. By the time a kid becomes a teenager, if bad parenting has occurred, it cannot be rescued, right? The parents cannot turn back the clock and reparent. That's why almost always it has to end up being somebody else who does it in one form or another. But yeah, when you launch into your teenage years and you haven't been able to make good, you've never been taught or modeled how to make good value decisions, and your true self, your moral self, has been attacked, as I sort of talk about in the book on truth, then what happens is you act out, right? And you sort of thrash around and you try on a wide variety of identities. And basically what you're doing is you're trying to find out who you are through trial and error. And there's lots of people who will exploit that to serve their own narcissistic needs, various groups around that will do that, like punks or rockers or whatever. And
I just,
then.
that's weird though, because I didn't really get to that point until I was 18 or 19. The real turning point with my mum was when I got a boyfriend who was actually good for me.
Right.
What was quite interesting was that she didn't like James at all. I have no idea why, because she'd never even met him when she decided that. But sort of boys that she had met before that she had liked, had turned out to be just really horrible people, which is quite natural actually, considering the kind of person she was. But I mean, I didn't really have that kind of. She always said that, I was a really bad teenager and stuff, but I wasn't up until I was 17 or 18.
Right.
Actually, no, yeah, probably 18, up until my last year of sixth form. Before then, I mean, it took me years and years to realize that she was a very manipulative person, because she had this kind of reign of terror thing going on,
Oh, sure.
where if you disagree with her, you'd be threatened with getting thrown out the house and stuff. Just things that, and it's weird because even, a month ago, well, not even that, a couple of weeks ago, I had a problem with my old estate agent and getting my deposit back from my old flat, and I had no idea how to handle it at all. I had no, I didn't know if I was being unreasonable, saying, well, actually, no, I'm not going to give the keys back until you tell me what's going on with this, because they were meant to give the deposit back by check, a predated check the week before you moved out, and they didn't. And I rang up the estate agent, and he was saying, oh, you have to give the keys back, I don't see what the problem is. And he got quite arsy with me,
Right.
and I pretty much said, well, I'm not very happy about giving the keys back until I know whether I'm going to get, all this money back or not. And I just felt like I was being completely unreasonable. I felt really bad about it. But yeah, I just have no idea how to handle these situations now.
But that's great. I mean, no, annoyingly enough, you know that you don't know.
Yeah.
Right? So that is magnificent. That is very, very important. Because being a punk is pretending you know, right?
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And so what you wanted, the reason that you feel envy is that you miss that crazy certainty.
Yeah, I think
When you knew what to do, you knew how to organize yourself. You knew, I mean, organize in the loosest possible way, but there was not that much
it's not just the
uncertainty.
crazy certainty, sorry to interrupt, it's not just the crazy certainty though, it's the blindness. It's that on this, obviously deep down you're aware that things are going horribly, horribly wrong, but on the surface you're just blocking it all out with with whatever you're doing. And I think a really horrible part of me misses that as well.
Sure, it's not horrible. It's not horrible at all. I mean, it's perfectly
Well,
natural. I mean, if I
it's not,
didn't
it's very
really,
unhealthy.
well, but it's where you are, right? I mean, to label it as healthy or unhealthy, it's like if I believed that I didn't have to go to the dentist, I'd feel like a real sucker for going to the dentist, right? Like if I could just eat candy, not brush my teeth, and if it was just a big scam, right? Then I'd feel sort of stupid. And so if I tried that and it didn't work, but I still believed that it was somehow possible. Then every time I flossed and brushed my teeth and, used mouthwash and this and that, right? Then I'd feel like not, like it would feel like a bit of a drag, right? Because it's like maybe somehow, some way, there's a way to not do this and still not have bad teeth or whatever, right? So you're just re relatively recent into this sort of conversation about, learning about your past and trying to figure out rational rules of behavior and so on. So there's no possibility that you could switch over to this. I mean, unless you were mental, which you're not, right? There's no way you could switch over to this and be completely certain about this immediately, right?
I mean, intellectually, I know it's the right thing because there's absolutely no way in which I can fault it at all. But
But
there's
emotionally,
still
it's
that,
slower.
yeah, exactly,
It's like if you're the captain of a big super tanker on the sea, you can say, "Well, I gotta oh, I'm going north. I should be going south," and you spin the wheel, right?
yeah, but it takes a while for the ship to turn
Takes a while for
around.
the ship to turn around, and you want that, right? Because then when you're going south, like if you could just turn on a dime, you can also turn back on a dime, right? You want to have some inertia in your personality. Right, so you don't want to sort of wake up and love James one morning and then in the afternoon hate him, right? So you want to have some inertia in your personality, or what I mean by that is you want your emotions to have some throughput, right? To have some stability. So the fact that it's not possible to erase the desires that you had relatively recently for a life which was nihilistic and lived for the moment and so on, the fact that you can't wish those things completely out of your system in the space of 6 or 12 months or whatever is healthy. Right? I mean, that's a sign of good and robust mental health, that it takes a while, because the people who switch immediately, they're terrifying, because just they have no stability. They're like a ship with no ballast.
Yeah, I hadn't actually thought of it that way, but you're absolutely right. I
So
mean,
envy
I
is
think I'd
envy.
almost felt sort of bad or inadequate because I couldn't do that, but yeah, you're absolutely right that that's a terrifying thing to be able to do.
Oh yeah, it's awful. I mean, if you ever want to really scare yourself with this sort of stuff, just talk to someone who led a sort of dissolute life, who's recently become a born again Christian.
Oh
What
yeah.
they've switched 180 in like a weekend, and they are really scary, right? Because it's all forced, and that what they've done is they've rejected their former self completely. And they've set up this sort of angry new persona where everything they did before is completely disowned. And it's
Well, it's
like,
like going from one addiction to another, isn't it?
but it is exactly going from one addiction to another, right? And to get a soft landing in the true self, it's bumpy, right? I mean, and you need to try it out, and you need to see if it works. And that's why, I mean, because I always get this cult question, right? But the whole point is like, don't trust me, God, don't trust me. Trust the ideas, trust reality, trust reason, trust evidence, and trust your own experience of things. But no, to switch like 180 and not have any pangings or yearnings for a former life would be it would not be healthy at all. I mean, that would be a sign of a not like it would be the sign of a new false self rather than getting to the true self, which is a transition.
This really came up though because Obviously, the whole situation with James and his dad a couple of weeks ago was awful, and we were talking about this, and like I said, I offered the information that I felt I didn't really have a sense of self, and he said he pretty much thought that that's why I didn't say to him at the time. I didn't watch his back, and I generally these things I don't watch his back.
And not because you don't
Because
care about
I'm
him, and not
scared
because you don't want him.
to.
It's not because you don't
Well,
care.
no,
It's not
absolutely not.
you'll say it because you don't
I
have to, right? It's not something that you've ever either had as a standard or been shown as an example, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm scared to.
Sure.
I mean, I've told him before when I think, his family being totally unreasonable and stuff, but that's when he already knows that.
Right.
And it's just, I mean, I felt awful. I felt really, really awful listening to the podcast today because it's something that's so obvious and it's right there, staring you in
Right.
the face.
And all that's happened is you've been trained to not see it. Right. It's not because you're
Yeah.
dumb. It's not because you're cowardly. It's just that in your family, if you ever tried anything like that, you would have been savagely attacked, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So it's a survival technique called I don't see this, right?
Yeah. But it's just I don't know how to get beyond that now. How can you see something that you don't see?
Well, that of course is the it's the $1 million question, right? There's no question of that. The only way that I found to really work on this sort of stuff is you have to figure out your principles, right? So if you and James sit down together and you say, "We have a principle called we don't give corrupt people power over us," right? And it's a horribly slow and painful process. It's like physiotherapy, like learning to walk after you've spent 20 years in a wheelchair, right? But you have to sort of say, okay, when you're making a decision, you have to say, okay, where does this decision fit on our values, right? So if you had a value called, we don't give corrupt people power over us, then the question of whether or not you should take the guarantee from James's dad, you'd sort of sit there and say, okay, where does this fit on our sort of value matrix or whatever, right? In terms of influence
And
behavior.
I mean, I kind of chickened out and I said, well, if you don't want to apologize, I completely understand. And, obviously, I don't really care. Whether we move or not is not important right now, but it's
I
up to
support
you.
whatever decision you're going to make.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like a business arrangement.
Well, no, but even
More
with that, right, when you say to
than
somebody, I will support any decision you make, what you're saying is, I don't exist. Right? If you're going to go on a vacation with James and you just say, I have no preference about where we go, I will go wherever you want to go, you
I
kind
do
of don't
that quite a
exist.
lot, though.
I know. I mean, I'm sure it's just an isolated thing. But getting used to having decisions and expressing decisions, to having preferences and expressing preferences, because our identity really is a series of expressed preferences. I mean, the identity that we share with other people, that we bring out into the world. I don't mean the dreams that we have at night necessarily, but it's the preferences and opinions and ideas and thoughts that we share with other people. And every time you put forward something where you just have no opinion, you basically don't exist, right? I mean, you are like just a leaf in the wind, right? So it's just getting used to having preferences and expressing them. Or if you don't have any preferences, say, you know what's weird is I don't have any preferences.
Yeah, I mean, I it's funny you say that because I mean, when we started going out, I had trouble deciding what I wanted for lunch. I just my mind just sort of switched off and I couldn't make any decision like that because I was so used to being told what I was gonna have.
And if I can just
And
sort of, sorry to interrupt you, but if
yeah,
I can
sure.
just fast forward you a couple of years, who knows how many, but children are born with incredibly built-in preferences, right? And so if you had gone through life in a kind of haze of absence, because having a preference would cause you anxiety, can you imagine what you would do to your children when they start expressing preferences at about the age of 12 months or 18 months or 2 years? and you were afraid of preferences, and preferences caused you anxiety, I think you can understand why it is that gets old or angry towards their children.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very aware of why it is, though, because, I mean, I hate to blame everything on my mum, but there we go. Like, you know, she was the kind of person who, if you, like, when I was younger, I remember we went on holiday, I can't remember where, I think it was Norway or something, because my dad worked for a Norwegian company, but I ordered, because I thought it sounded really cool, I ordered, like, ox tongue or something, and then it arrived, and I realised it was actually a tongue that I'd have to eat. And I really, really didn't want to eat it at that point because it was just disgusting. And my mum made me sit there and eat it.
Right, which
She's
is,
like,
I
oh,
mean,
well, you've ordered it now. And, you know, it got to the point where I was 17 and she's saying, no, I'm not going to buy any more clothes that are black because you wear too much black and all that kind of thing. And you don't realise it at the time. You just, at the time, it's, you know, more of a pain in the ass type thing. But then you realise that actually, why? You know, what, how does it really affect you if I'm wearing black? You know, does it?
Right, right. And I mean, the sadism of making a child eat an ox tongue is, I mean, it's savage, right? I mean, this is
sick stuff. Ugh, it's horrible. I mean, even now, thinking about it, just makes me, you know, feel a bit ill.
Well, and of course, you know, you were very clear at this point, and probably much earlier, that you had no bond of sympathy that you could invoke in your mother, right? So you were probably crying and you were pleading not to be forced to do this revolting thing. I can't believe they even sell this stuff, but you were, you know, begging and pleading, and she was like a stone wall, right? Like, you will, and there is a sick kind of pleasure that people get out of forcing children to, you know, bullying children, right? I mean, it's just gross.
Oh yeah, no, I'm aware of that. I mean, yeah, it's a power thing. It's I mean, it's very much related to the relationship my mom has with her mom.
Well, as you said, when your grandmother...
It's a really, really weird relationship. You know, it's all about power.
Yeah, I mean, as you said, with your, when your grandmother took you to get your second ear piercing, as you say, your mother...
Yeah, yeah. She didn't tell my mom. She just... And then, of course, my mom wouldn't say anything negative to her about it. Like, well, why did you do that without telling me? Because...
Well, and you can see that the grandmother here humiliating your mother, right, by totally overriding her parenting, right?
Yeah.
So your mother has a habit of being humiliated by women, and then she goes around and does the same thing to you. You fortunately and magnificently are breaking the cycle, but this stuff can go on for thousands of years otherwise.
Well, that's not just me. It's my brother as well. I mean, I think she's focusing more on my brother now because I'm not there anymore, and he's effectively... the only child now, because he's only 14, so he's got quite a few years left to go.
Right.
And this is a huge bone of contention with my dad at the moment, because my mum is pretty much an alcoholic. There's strong evidence to suggest that she's an alcoholic now. My brother's found sort of bottles of vodka and stuff that are empty and cupboards and all that kind of horrible, horrible stuff. And her behavior's always been just highly irrational and just crazy. But my dad doesn't do anything about it. He makes all these excuses about money and lawyers and everything. And he has other stuff to sort out with my mom first. And I don't really... I mean, one of the... I have no qualms about not having anything to do with my mom again, because she's an obviously poisonous, bad person. But my dad is... Yeah, he's bad, but he's a lot more subtle. And for me, there's also the issue that if I defue from my dad, you know, if I defue totally, I want to keep in contact with my brother, because, like, you know, I love my brother to bits. He's wonderful. And I'm very, very worried that he's just going to kind of reject me for defuing and say, because he's. This is something he's brought up at the moment, because obviously he's still living with my mom, even though she's obviously just gone completely off the rails. Because my dad won't do anything about it. You know, he says he's doing something about it, but he isn't. He'll make all the excuses under the sun. But he has mentioned a couple of times, mom's had a go at me about you again, and she keeps bringing you up, and every time I mention you, you know, if I want to come up and see you, it's, oh, well, she's done this, she's done that. And I don't know what to say to him, apart from, I'm sorry.
No, there's nothing that you need to say. Just, I mean, if you want to talk to him, just you can ask him how he feels about it.
Yeah, I mean,
Yeah, how does that make you feel, right? So this person is complaining about me, but it's got nothing to do with you, right? So there's nothing for you to apologize for. This is your own
yeah,
behavior.
I mean, we have talked about it, and he knows that she's the one that's in the wrong, and he has brought it up, because she said some particularly vindictive things towards the end of our relationship, which were just sort of just no-go areas as far as any relationship's concerned. And he's brought that up with her several times.
But why is he telling you that your mother is speaking negatively about you?
I mean, I know exactly why. It's exactly the same as she did with my dad when they divorced, because my dad had an affair, and it was all like, "Oh, your father, he's such a bastard," blah blah blah. And then every time we went to stay with my dad, which was quite rarely to begin with, it would be, "Oh well, did you have a good time?" Yeah, he only gets to see the good parts of you. He doesn't have to deal with stuff like homework, blah 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 blah. It's
No,
all
sorry,
kind
I
of.
just want to interrupt you for a second because I don't like if I know that people speak badly about me, but I don't want to be told.
I think for my brother, it's
No, and we're
he
talking about
doesn't
your
have
dad.
anyone to talk to.
No, you're I thought it was your dad who was saying that your mother was complaining about you.
Oh no, my mum would complain to us. My dad knew exactly what was going on,
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
without us saying anything, because he knew exactly what my mum was like. But that was my mum. Sorry, that was my mum talking to us.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And but no, my mum would do that about my dad. My dad was always quite. This is what I mean about my dad. My dad doesn't like confronting my mom about anything. He just wants to have a nice, quiet life,
Well, of
which
course, this is the
involves not
horrifying
sticking up
thing.
for his children. But
The
there we go.
horrifying thing is that your dad can't handle your mom, but your
Oh
brother
no,
is,
absolutely
right?
not. That's why he got out of the marriage the way he did.
No, sorry, what I meant is that your dad can't handle your mom, but your brother is somehow supposed to be able to, right?
Yeah, well, that's what my dad's telling me, and that's what he's telling my brother. And that's what my dad told me for a while as well. He said, you have to keep the bridges open with your mom. You can't close them off until I took him, I guess, to on a very basic level. I used the Socratic method and took him through it step by step, and got to the point where he said, "I know what I'm saying is probably totally irrational." So I said, "Well, why are you saying it then?" At which point he admitted it was probably because he felt guilty because he'd left us there
And
while
so the
he
solution to his
did his
guilt is to
thing.
have you spend more time with your mother.
Yeah, but after I pointed that out to him, he stopped telling me that I should see her.
Oh, that's good. I guess that's a step. That's a step. Yeah, I
Yeah,
mean, it
but
doesn't
I've tried
sound
doing the
very
same
like.
thing with my brother and it hasn't done anything.
Well, yeah, but he's still in the belly of the beast, right?
No, I mean, I mean, basically every conversation I have with my dad now focuses around what he's doing about my brother, because my brother's really unhappy, and my mum's done stuff recently, like put my brother into boarding while she goes off to India, and hasn't told my dad, and hasn't even told my brother that he's going back there in January. He got told by one of his teachers,
Yeah.
and she
Yeah.
does stuff like that, and my dad just doesn't bat an eyelid at all.
Wow. Yeah, I mean they're a team, right? I mean the sickness, there's not one who's more healthy than the other, right?
Yeah, but what do you do about that?
Well, there's nothing, I mean I don't know the laws, I don't know in terms of custody or whatever, but I mean there's nothing that you can do. I mean it's
Yeah, I
all
mean you have to this is kind of my dad's excuse. You have to prove beyond reasonable doubt that my mum's incapable of looking after my brother.
Right.
But at the same time, I mean, I've offered to say, she did XYZ to me. But he won't take that at all. He just
Yeah.
won't confront her at all.
Well, look, you survived, and your brother has you as a resource, which you didn't have. Right? So even if nothing can be done for the next 4 years, right? You survived, you made it, and you have a resource to offer him that was never offered to you, right? So the odds of him making it, all other things being equal, are far higher than the odds of you making it, and you made it.
Yeah, I guess.
You guess in what you didn't make it?
I don't know. I still have this. I feel like I should be doing something, but.
And you may want to talk to a solicitor, and you may want to find out what the options are. There is early childhood emancipation, right, where he gains the legal right to get welfare or to get out of a parental situation. There may
I don't think you can do that in the UK.
Yeah, I don't know. Again, I mean, but if you look at the legal possibilities and
Yeah.
find that they're not available, then you just have to say, I'm there, I can choose to stick around and see him as best as I can. I can choose to give him resources, like he's obviously old enough and smart enough to listen to some of this stuff, right? So I can give him resources that can, but still to some degree, it's up to him, right? You can't, don't
Yeah.
emasculate him completely by saying, like, I need to save him, right? Because he's got to retain some sense of power himself. And your dread for him will have a huge effect on him. Like, if you dread that he's going to go off the rails, you are contributing to him going off the rails.
Yeah,
Right,
that's
I
really
don't know
hard.
if you remember when you were a kid, like if you're carrying something in and everyone leans forward and is like, don't drop it, don't drop it.
Oh yeah.
I mean, your odds of dropping it go up enormously, right? So if you have confidence that your brother's going to make it, that's the best thing, and give him resources and are available to him, then, and if you are sort of unwavering in your feelings towards your mom and the destruction that occurred, that's the best thing that you can do for him, is just believe in him, right?
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right, yeah. But I mean, I think also this has a lot to do with the stuff with James and his parents as well. It's just making that decision to say, no, that's wrong, and sticking by it. I mean, part of the problem I have with defeating for my dad is the guilt. It's, again, something I was talking about to James earlier is the fact that today I was actually thinking of sitting down and writing a letter because it got to the point where I was thinking, this is ridiculous. There's absolutely no reason why I'm in contact with him anymore apart from this. It's quite a manipulative reason. This stupid test, basically, I set up for him, which he's just failed so far, which I knew would happen anyway, but anyway, but at the same time, I felt really guilty because I spoke to him earlier today, and he's got his exam on Saturday, he's studying for, he's gone back to university, and there's sort of X, Y, and Z that I know I just feel really, really guilty about if I defeat right now, and it's nearly Christmas and stuff like that, but then part of me is thinking, well. That's quite minute in comparison to what's gone on before.
It is, and of course, you should not be in a relationship with someone because you'll feel bad about not being in a relationship with them.
Yeah.
All right, I mean, if James said to you, "Well, I'd really like to leave you, but I just think you're so pathetic that you'd never find somebody else."
I
Right? This
feel
would
pretty
not
bad
be
about
something
that.
that this would not be something that you would take very calmly, right? Or it would feel that it
No.
So, and of
No.
course, the pattern that you have learned is to use other people to manage your own feelings, right?
Yeah,
Right?
yeah.
Your guilt is your issue, right? Your issue to deal with. Staying with your dad because of guilt is using him. It's not his
Yeah.
job.
Well, no,
And
I this is the thing is that this what I'm trying to deal with at the moment is that I know I'm using him for utility and also for managing the fact that, yeah, like you said, managing my own emotions. But I don't really want to see him, I don't really want to talk to him, and I'm going through the process of kind of weighing up the fact that my not, the fact that not talking to him and actually not having him, because he uses me for utility as well.
sure.
He's very manipulative himself in a far more. It's very easy to pin stuff on my mum because she's very openly irrational, very violent, very aggressive, and very manipulative. Whereas my dad is, like I said, he's a lot more subversive. So it's very difficult to kind of, I guess, point the finger at him and say, "Oh, well, he did X, Y, Z. He did this wrong." But what he is doing is wrong. because he's using me as well.
Sure.
And it's just, for some reason, it's still, well, I know why, because he's my dad. It's still very
No, it's
difficult
his
to.
preference that you stay in the relationship, right?
Yeah.
It's not, I mean,
Because he also has people that he needs to impress,
yeah, I mean, how is he gonna like? He gets to say, well, my ex-wife was horrible and so on, but I have a good relationship with my daughters, which gets him off the hook, right? It's his need to have you around that you are feeling, not your need to be around him.
It's actually been a kind of joke of his recently that, oh, well, because I had a conversation with him about a month ago where it was quite a low point and things were going quite wrong for me college-wise. No, well, not wrong, but I just was really unhappy, and I had quite an open, honest conversation with him where I said, I'm unhappy at college. I don't feel like I'm making any friends. I don't feel, and I talked about my relationship with him as well. I don't feel like I can really talk to you. And this is why. And we had quite an honest conversation about it. And I felt like that was sort of a landmark as far as our relationship went. And we were actually going to make some progress. And he phoned me up the next day, I think pretty much to make sure I wasn't doing anything stupid, because when I talked to him, I was quite low and quite depressed about things. And then it was just never mentioned again. And at that point, he'd sort of, I told him that I wanted to go and see a therapist or a counselor, and he said, what can I really want to help you, what can I do to you? And I said, well, if you want to do something for me, you can pay for me to go and see a therapist. And he'd agreed to do that. After basically I had to tell him, I used your argument for the economics of going into therapy, how in the long run financially it's better for you, because that's the kind of language he uses, unfortunately.
Sure.
The fact that I would be happier didn't really swing it for him. It should have been an indication to begin with, but yeah, it was just never mentioned again.
Right.
And so I mean, he knows how I feel about things. I can't even remember what I was talking about now. This has been a complete tangent. But yeah, that was really the fact that he hasn't kind of brought that up since and hasn't even asked me how things are. He was shocked when I, because I've decided to change my course at university because I'm doing English at the moment, and it's a bit of a bollocks subject. It's not really, I miss the rationality of
Yeah, I did the same thing. I bailed out
sort
of
of things.
English and went into something else.
Yeah, I'm doing it quite late in the game though, because I'm in my second year now. So
Better now
I'm.
than the third year, right?
Pardon?
It's better now than third year, though.
Oh yeah, definitely, definitely. But yeah, I've had to go through quite a lot of, I mean, I found it very, very difficult to talk to my tutors at college and everything about this, because obviously they've devoted their whole lives to the subject and they're quite judgmental about the whole thing. But yeah, my dad was very shocked when I told him that I wanted to change my course, even though we'd had this conversation. And all these things, I think, together have pretty much been the deciding thing for me. But there's still this part of me that just wants to kind of run away and hide. And I think that's pretty much the same. That's pretty much what was going on when James had the thing with his dad as well. Is I don't want to tell him, no, don't apologize to him, because that's a very decisive action. That's going to change everything.
Right. And so what that means is that there's a decisive action on your side that you're avoiding too.
Yeah.
And the decisive action may not be to not see your dad again. The decisive action may be to sit down for another conversation with him, right? Because you still have hope with regards to your dad, in the same way that there's still a part of you that has hope for the nihilistic lifestyle that it could somehow work out for someone and you don't have to go through all this. So the best way to eliminate that hope is to sit down and talk to people, right?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know whether you think it's just giving up too soon, but I pretty much feel like I've said all I have to say to my dad. I mean, I've tried to talk to him since about the fact that he pretty much upped and left. There was a reason why he left my mum, and it's quite obvious what the reason was. And he Not only did he leave, 8 years ago, but he also he's not doing anything about my brother now. and he's using every, he wants to get something to do with the property sorted out before he sorts out my brother, which to me is just crazy.
But it's not crazy given who he married and given the kind of father he was, right? See, you think this is a deviation from a pattern, but for him it's not, right?
No, I don't think it's a deviation from a pattern. It just seems crazy anyway, and I know exactly what he's like. I mean, it's weird because my mum always said he was totally spineless, but she meant it in the way that, yeah, actually, no, she did mean it in the way that he wouldn't confront her about anything because, she liked to have quite a good fight with people, and he won't confront her about anything.
But he makes promises, right? So he knows the right thing to do. He just won't do it.
Oh yeah, he makes pro well, I mean, when I talked about testing him the last couple of months, he made, he pretty much he promised me something that's quite mundane, but something he knew that was quite important to me. And this was 3 months ago now, and nothing, absolutely nothing's come of it. And that's exactly the same, he likes to keep people happy, basically.
Well, no, he likes to keep himself happy by
Yeah,
lying
I
to
guess,
people, right?
but I mean, within keeping himself happy is keeping other people happy, so
No,
they're not
no, no, no,
hassling
no,
him about
no,
stuff.
no, 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 no. It doesn't keep people happy to lie to them. To say you're going to do something and then not do it does not make people happy. What it does is it gets them to stop pestering you about doing something for a while, right?
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, that's what I meant. Like, keep people happy in the present.
But it doesn't. I mean, it
If you
doesn't
say
work
I'll
and
do
it
it
doesn't last.
tomorrow, then you're satisfied until tomorrow.
Right.
Up to a
Right.
certain point.
And then, of course, I mean, but you know, this is not a habit of his that's going to change, right?
Yeah, and that's kind of the conversation I was having again with James tonight, is the fact that in some ways I've been very manipulative the past couple of months because I've kept going on at him about this one thing
Right, because
in
once you
full
accept.
knowledge that he won't do it, and it's become a matter of principle rather than actually getting
Talking to your dad about the real things, but you're kind of saying, I'll talk to him after he does this one thing.
do you want to say that?
Yeah.
No.
Hello.
Hello.
I was just saying that I think she's kind of going through this whole thing with her dad because she doesn't want to talk to him about the kind of the real stuff because it's always kind of like, well, I'll talk to him after he does this. And she kind of knows he's not going to confront her mom about the piano because he's not confronting her mom about her brother.
Yeah, look, the best predictor of future behavior is relevant past behavior, right? And since he hasn't done it for 50 years or 40 years or 60 years or whatever, he's not going to do it tomorrow. He's not going to do it next month. He's not going to do it next year, ever.
I'll just pass you back on to
Sorry, I didn't hear any of
Oh, I
that.
was just going to say the best predictor of future behavior is relevant past behavior. If he's not done it
Yeah.
for 40 years or 50 years or whatever, he's not going to start doing it tomorrow. He's not going to start doing it next month. He's not going to start doing it next year. The amount of
Yeah, and
change in his personality.
that's exactly the point that James brought up. It's like, do you really think he's going to change this
Yeah, he's
once?
not going to change.
You trying He said, you're effectively trying to redeem him,
Well,
which I
yeah,
have
what you're
actually
trying to do is
realized.
change him into someone that you want to spend time with.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not it's not going to work.
But again, this links. This is a conversation I've also had with James, that this links into the whole friends thing, which I don't have many of them right now because I don't know, all the people I spent time with the last couple of years are just not really people I want to spend time with anymore.
But one
They
thing at
all
a time, right? One thing at a time, right?
Yeah, the problem with that for me though is that even if it's just because he needs to feel better about himself. My dad rings me up and he asks me how I am, even if it's on a very superficial level, and even if he doesn't listen to me, there is that part of me that likes the fact that someone will ring me up and ask me, how are you? Even if 2 seconds later they're going to launch into, how awful our week's been or something like that. And I know it's wrong, but
Well, you're
that's the
avoiding the
compulsion.
pain, right? You're avoiding the pain of being alone, because you think that,
Right,
you think that by having your dad call you that that has something to do with alleviating loneliness, but it doesn't. What it does is it just makes it go away, the same way that heroin will make a toothache go away, but the problem still remains and in fact gets worse, right?
Yeah, and that it's very much just the fact that, you know, effectively if I do food for my dad, the only person, apart from my brother, the only person really going to have left is James, and obviously, you know, I have no way of knowing whether it's going to last or not. And then if something happens with that, you know, I'm going to be, and it's really selfish, but I'm just going to be totally alone. And I have no idea how to handle that at all.
I understand that. I really do. And that's a very valid fear. This is something that Nate was talking about a couple of weekends ago on the Sunday show, that is this fear of being alone. But of course, the first thing is that you, relative to your dad, you're already alone. But you're worse than alone because your dad is blocking your route to getting to better people, right?
Yeah, that's something.
Like, as long as you say, well, if somebody just pretends to be interested in me, I couldn't be happier, right?
Then no, the thing is, though, is that I'm not happy. I know it's such a twisted motive, but it's you get that immediate gratification from seeing the caller ID on your phone, knowing that someone's calling you because they want to talk to you, whatever it's about.
Right.
But then there is also that knowledge deep down that actually they don't really give a shit.
You don't get to a better place until you leave where you are, right? Like we all want some escalator to arise from where we are to take us to the next level, right? And we don't want to let go of what we have in order to get to the next thing, which is better, right? We want that next thing to pull us like a gravity well, right, to pull us into the next place.
You want to be more like a lift.
Yeah, we want to, you know, well, I've met all these great new people, so slowly I can phase out my problematic friends, right?
Yeah,
but it doesn't work that way, right? You don't get the great people, right, until you let go of your existing friends. It just doesn't work that way. Like, if I'm a chain smoker and I want to win the marathon, I don't sit there and say, well, when I get really good at the marathon, I'll quit smoking.
Yeah.
Right? You have to quit smoking in order to get really good at the marathon, right? To get to the next thing, you have to leave where you are behind.
Yeah, you have to step off the edge of the cliff.
Yeah, I mean, I wish there was an easier way, and I'm certainly, you know, if you could find one, I'd be happy, you know, in this doesn't seem to be the case. You have to let go of where you are in order to get to the next thing. You just have to. There's no easy way. There's no hot air balloon that carries you over the canyon, right?
Yeah.
You just have to let go of where you are. And then, because our personalities really only change under pressure, right? I don't mean pressure like stress, right? But our personalities will only change when we stop doing that, which is comfortable and not healthy, right?
Yeah, I mean, I completely agree. I mean, this is why I was thinking of not necessarily sending the letter, but sitting down and drafting out a letter to my dad today, saying I just want a break from the whole family.
And you can see, if you find that you really miss him and it's really terrible and you miss all these great things about him, he's still going to be there.
I don't think I will, though. I don't, you know, I haven't seen him for 2 weeks, and before that I didn't see him for well over a month, and I don't miss him.
Right.
You know, I've never missed him. But this is why I was thinking of sitting down, actually drafting out this letter today, because when I listened to the call-in show that you guys did last night, I realized that this is a major factor in how I make my decisions.
Yeah, it has an effect.
Especially with relation to James and his dad.
Yeah, it has a relation. Your relationship with your dad has an enormous and foundational impact on your relationship with James.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially my views of James' relationship with his dad. Because, you know, I've said to James several times before, you know, I think your dad's a bully, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I said this to him last night, you know, it's always been very in the abstract. It's never been something specific. Like, I've never said what he said here was wrong. I've always applied general terms to him. For example, I think your dad's being very sarcastic, which obviously isn't productive. I think your dad's being a bully. But yeah, I've never gone that step further and pointed to a specific incident and said, no, this is wrong.
Right. So my suggestion would be, and I'm going to have to jump just because I have another call coming up, but my suggestion would be, you know, sit down and write the letter, see how you feel. You don't have to mail it. You don't like to just sit down and see how you feel and see how you feel if you just imagine taking a couple of months off from seeing your dad, right? And see how you feel about how you imagine feeling about that over time, right? Just see how you feel. And then if you think that that is a good thing or you feel some sort of positive stuff around that, then do that, and then if you find that you don't miss him and, you know, dread the phone call or whatever, then you'll have your answer, right? But sometimes we have to do and then see how we feel about it if we are paralyzed, right?
Yeah. What's the phrase? Action leads to certainty or something like that.
That certainly is the case, and not random action, yeah. But for sure, action can definitely get you to where you need to be.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're very, very welcome. I will send you guys a copy of this and you can have a listen if you like.
Okay, thanks a lot.
All right, bye.